wasn't half this excited when his baby sister was born. But enough about puppies. Harriet took a seat in the card table's other chair. What about neighbors? Have you sold the place? Yes, I have, to a wonderful owner, I'll have you know. This property is perfect for her and she for it. Celeste chose a cookie, gave a reverent sniff, then asked, Would you please see to that trunk now, Josh? The new owner is up exploring in the attic. She'll show you which one. He was honestly more interested in the house than in the neighbor, so he nodded and asked, Where do you want it when I get it downstairs? If you'll set it in the back of the maroon SUV out front, that'll be wonderful. It's unlocked. Celeste took a bite of her cookie and said, Oh, Harriet, your cookies are sinful. I dare say you could give Fresh Bakery a run for its money with these. Josh exited the kitchen as Harriet replied with self-deprecating words in a voice brimming with delight. Celeste did have a way of finding the perfect words to please everyone. Josh peeked into the first floor rooms before heading up the staircase. The long and skinny floor plan meant that the house had a good portion of its square footage on the ground level. While he'd always preferred tinkering with machines to running power tools, he could see the promise in this place. Wonder what the floors looked like beneath that vinyl. And why in the world would anyone have laid that monstrosity to begin with? The word reminded him of the Munster reference earlier, so he was grinning as he climbed the stairs. He was halfway up when Harriet poked her head out of the kitchen. She smiled upon seeing him and said, Oh, good. I'm glad I caught you before I had to climb the stairs. The beauty shop just called, and Elizabeth is able to work me in for a perm, so I'm scooting on home. Also, my call reminded Celeste that she has a mani-pedi appointment, so she's headed back to Angel's Rest. She's asked for you to pass along a message to the new owner. She's to bring the attic, trunk, and the papers Celeste left on the table with her to Angel's Rest any time after 3 o'clock today.
Will do.
Don't forget the cookie tin I filled for you. You left it on my front porch.
Oh, I won't forget.
He waited until he heard her leave, before continuing up the stairs. On the second floor, he took a thorough tour of all the bedrooms. Again, the place had promise, though it needed a lot of work. If Jax Lancaster was the contractor, Josh hoped he liked stripping wallpaper. At one end of the hallway, an open door revealed stairs to the attic. Josh's boots scuffed the steps as he started up, and in an effort not to startle the new owner, he called,
Hello? Celeste sent me up to get a trunk.
A muffled feminine voice responded, but he couldn't make out the words. He stepped into the attic, glanced around, and murmured,
Cool.
It was a dusty, mostly empty rabbit warren that called out to the child inside him. One of the few good memories he had of visiting his father was the visit they'd made to the Trammell family's summer house in Maine. It had rained for the majority of the visit, and he'd spent hours exploring the contents of the attic. Trunks of old costumes had been a treasure trove for a 9-year-old who'd learned at a young age how to lose himself in make-believe. This particular attic wasn't stuffed to the rafters with trunks and crates and old furnishings. He spied one rocker, a wardrobe, 3 trunks, and a harp, with all of 3 strings intact. What he didn't see was any sign of his new neighbor. Take that back. He did see footprints in the dust. They led to the wardrobe and disappeared.
Huh, he murmured.
Then, speaking louder, he added,
Hello?
I'm here, came a muffled voice. The door is jammed on this side and I can't find another way out.
Josh felt a little silly as he opened the wardrobe door looking for a lady. The wardrobe was empty, but a crooked sliver of light made the false back obvious.
Well, look at that. A secret passage.
Delighted, Josh slipped his fingers into the opening and jiggled the back. The piece was heavy and it took some work, but he finally managed to slip it into its track. He then slid the false back open to reveal a square tunnel about 10 feet long. Of course, Josh had to see where it led. He bent over and crawled a couple of feet inside.
Hello?
You fixed it!
The voice sounded familiar.
No.
A shiver of apprehension skittered down his spine. No, no. This was the new owner, his new next-door neighbor? It can't be. Not right next door. He must be imagining things. That voice wasn't hers. This was his paranoia at work. His imagination was running away with him. Nevertheless, Josh's instincts screamed at him to play the cowardly lion and back right out of the tunnel.
I'm so glad, she said. I admit I was starting to worry a bit.
Oh, hell. It was her. His new next-door neighbor. I am so screwed. Josh filled his lungs with air, then blew it out slowly. He'd never been clairvoyant, but he was certain that this wouldn't be the last time that Caitlin Timberlake brought him to his knees.
OMG, OMG, OMG!
Caitlin's pulse raced. Her mouth went as dry as a good martini. She'd expected Jax Lancaster. That wasn't Jax. That was Josh. OMG, OMG, OMG. This wasn't how she'd planned the meeting. She'd imagined it happening a dozen different ways, but never had it involved a surprise encounter when she was dusty and disheveled and trapped in a secret attic bedroom. Although, wasn't a bedroom exactly where she wanted to get him?
OMG, OMG, OMG.
Okay, girl. Planned or not, this is the hand you've been dealt. Like Dad always says, start like you mean to go on. So that meant casual and friendly and real. She resumed the search she'd been making of the walls of the room when Josh's face moved into view. Those cheekbones, those eyes. She hadn't remembered how he really was good-looking. Movie star handsome. Well, hello, Josh. I wasn't expecting you to be the one who came to my rescue. He froze and closed his eyes. In a resigned voice, he said, Hello, Caitlin. So it is you. Live and in person and stuck in this room. But isn't it cool? I've been searching for another exit, but if one exists, it's not obvious. Now that you've rescued me, I don't need to look for it so hard. Thanks, Josh. You're my knight in shining armor. He exited the tunnel and climbed slowly to his feet. Was that a faint light of hope in his eyes?
You're visiting? He asked. You're a friend of the person who bought this house from Celeste?
Caitlin worked hard to keep her nervousness hidden and show only excitement in her smile. I am the person who bought this house from Celeste.
Why?
Here you go. Roll your dice, woman. I'm moving home, Josh. His only reaction was a wince. She continued. I'm going to open a daycare center. Now he gawked at her.
In Eternity Springs?
In this house. I was going to buy a lot and build, but Celeste suggested this place. It has so much potential, and she made me a heck of a deal. Honestly, she all but gave it to me.
No.
No?
This house will make a terrible daycare.
Her chin came up. It'll make a great daycare. This house was built for children. The Haberstroh family, in fact, they had 12.
12 what?
Children.
Children? 12 children in one family?
Yes, there is a whole stack of family history paraphernalia in one of the trunks in the main attic, including a stack of letters exchanged between Mrs. Haberstroh and her sister. In one of them, Mrs. Haberstroh writes a paragraph on each child. It's fascinating. The Haberstrohs weren't one of Eternity Springs' founding families, but by its 25th anniversary, they were definitely one of the most prominent. Mr. Haberstroh founded our first bank.
Great for him. But what does that have to do with little children tumbling down the staircase?
Baby gates prevent that. Jax is going to create a custom design for me. Caitlin tried not to be discouraged by his obvious lack of enthusiasm for her news. Yes, it would have been nice if he'd lit up like a 4th of July sparkler when she told him she'd moved home. But Caitlin never expected this to be easy. Experience had taught her that more often than not, when it came to dealing with men, patience won the race. Lori's relationship with Chase was the textbook example of that. Josh dragged his hand down his face and stared at her for a long, silent minute. Then he glanced slowly around the room, his gaze landing on the thick feather bed that was covered with a beautifully stitched quilt in shades of crimson and gold, in the double wedding ring pattern. A daycare. Yes, one is sorely needed in town. Did it really need to be next door to me? Celeste assured me that you like children. I do. One or two at a time, not by the dozens. You really don't need to worry, Josh. It's not like they'll be running in and out of your house or business. The whole idea of a daycare is to take care of children. They won't be running wild up and down the street, and they'll be gone by 6 o'clock. But you are a textile designer with a dream job in New York. Why would you come to Eternity Springs? Now you sound like my mother, Caitlin grumbled. She was beginning to get peeved. The man acted like she'd just killed his cat. I told you this in Telluride. My job might be a dream job, but it's not my dream job. He dragged his gaze away from the bed. And corralling little snot goblins is? Yes. She waited a beat, then asked, Do you make a habit of raining on parades, Josh? He closed his eyes. No, not usually. So why are you raining on mine? Now his eyes flew open, hot and accusing. Because you've backed me into a corner, or more specifically, lured me into a secret room. I didn't lure you anywhere, Caitlin fired back. You crawled in here all by yourself. Yes, I crawled, Josh said, a bitter note in his tone. He took a step toward her. I crawled, and I'm not proud of it. I knew better, but I did it anyway. The look on his face turned brooding as he stared at her. I've been kicking myself the last few weeks for the choice I made in Telluride. I should have taken you upstairs that night. Maybe if I had, you wouldn't have haunted me ever since. Caitlin's heart went thud-a-thump. I haunted you? Yep. You sing a siren song, Caitlin Timberlake. You threaten me. Threaten him? Caitlin's mouth went a little dry. That look in his eyes, he was a predator about to pounce. What do you mean? His gaze narrowed and began to smolder. You know what I mean. No, I don't. She took a step backward and asked, Where's Celeste?
Gone. You and I are here by ourselves. We're all alone.
Josh took another step forward.
We're all alone, and you know exactly what I mean when I say you threaten me. I'm beginning to think you're as witchy a woman as Celeste is.
I beg your pardon? He snorted. Am I supposed to believe that it's simply coincidence that in all the neighborhoods and all the towns in America, you found the perfect location for your business right next door to me? Yes, she snapped, retreating until her shoulder blades touched the wall. That's the truth. Not hardly. Like my nanny used to say, I was born at night, but not last night. I'll tell you what it is, beautiful. Not coincidence, but my usual rotten luck showing its head again. Bad luck. It follows me everywhere. It's my birthright. Goes back generations. It's my destiny. My own personal curse. Caitlin believed there was an insult toward her buried in there, even if he had called her beautiful. Now I seem to have my own personal ghost. His arms shot out. His hands rested against the wall, trapping her between them. Harriet was right.
This place is a ghost story come alive, so of course you'd buy it. It's perfect for you, because you have haunted me ever since we met, in my sleep, in my daydreams. Trembling and trying to hide it, Caitlin lifted her chin. Are you trying to flatter me or insult me? Neither. I'm just telling you how it is. There was a time in my life when I denied myself nothing. You remind me of those years, the need, the craving. You make me wonder why I denied myself in Telluride. His gaze dropped to her mouth. Heat rolled off his body as electricity surged between them. You know what, Caitlin? I'm tired of the question. I do believe I'm done with it. You don't mind a little dust, do you? It's not as thick in here as it is in the other room. Let's do this. Let's scratch this itch and be done with it. Scratch this itch and be done? She tried to put some venom in her tone, but he was so close, so hot. Just so you know, you've definitely managed insulting. So tell me now. Shove me away. Deliberately, he leaned forward and fitted his body against hers. Tell me I don't turn you on, and you don't want to have sex with me, and we'll go on about our business being nothing but neighbors. Chances are that would work, too, because I don't go where I'm not wanted. But this haunting can't go on, not with you living next door. Caitlin caught her breath, his erection pressed against her, hard and thick and obvious, even through the layers of their clothing. Tell me no, Caitlin. She should. She should absolutely tell him to take his itch elsewhere. Instead, when he slowly lowered his head, she lifted her face toward him. At the first feather-light touch of his lips against hers, Caitlin knew. She'd come home. He was her home. This was right. She'd made the right decision. Josh Tarkington was the man she'd dreamt of finding. Her heart soared. He groaned low in his throat as he deepened the kiss, licking into her mouth, and their tongues danced. He tasted of cinnamon and chocolate, and Caitlin's knees went weak. If she hadn't been clutching his shirt with both hands for support, she'd have melted to the floor. His left hand slid down the wall to grip her hip. The right thrust deep into her hair as he kissed her and kissed her and kissed her with slow, savoring deliberation. Her body throbbed with arousal. Her heartbeat slammed against her chest wall. Her blood turned to steam. Yet, even as they exchanged what had to be the hottest kiss of her life, Caitlin sensed the resistance within him. Despite the way he'd advanced on her, he wasn't all in. So she wasn't surprised when he broke the kiss and lifted his head to gaze down at her, his enthralling gray eyes gleaming with heat and challenge. His voice low and gruff, he said, "Just so we're crystal clear, this doesn't change anything. Moving next door to me doesn't change anything. I swore off relationships years ago. Sleeping with me won't change that, Caitlin." And here comes the cold water to douse my fire. Pride made her lift her chin. Wait a minute. I haven't said yes yet. He smirked. Sure you have. You've been saying yes since the moment we met. Caitlin opened her mouth to protest, but he stopped her by swooping in and nipping at her lower lip. You want me. You broadcast it with the gleam in your eyes, the knowledge in your smile, and the sensual stroke of your touch. As he spoke, the hand on her hip skimmed up and down her back. The rough, husky note in his voice reverberated through her, strumming her nerves, rekindling the heat that his words had banked. Everything within her seemed to swell in response to him. She wanted nothing more than to abandon herself to the sensual spell he wove. And he dares to call me witchy. I'm not the only one who's been sending out signals, she defended, not yet ready to surrender. She spoke the truth. Nothing about the sexual chemistry that flowed between them from the very beginning had been one-sided. The air fairly crackled with it whenever they were together, and there was no mistaking the signal pressed up against her right now. And she wanted to feel the hard, thick heat of him inside her with a desperation that frankly shocked her.
"I won't argue that," he murmured, something dangerous glittering in his eyes.
"It's definitely mutual." His hands on her hardened, his hips pressed her, pinned her against the wall, his intent unmistakable.
"I want you more than I want to breathe, and I'm through fighting it. We're alone in a private hideaway that comes complete with a bed. Like the saying goes, there's your sign. I'm through fighting fate, Caitlin. It's wasted effort. I will never win. So I've offered terms of surrender. Do you accept them? Yes or no?"
This was all happening way too fast. He'd caught her off guard, caught her unprepared. Caitlin was accustomed to being in control of the pace of her relationships. She wasn't in control here, not at all. The man had waltzed in here, taken one look at her, and was ready to throw her on the bed and have his way with her.
Yes, please. Total fantasy come to life.
Except he didn't want to want her. Also, he appeared more ready to conquer than surrender. So why was he rolling out surrender? Surrender meant defeat. There was nothing defeated about the Josh Tarkington who just demanded sex. Sex with terms.
"I'm confused," she breathed.
"About what?"
"Terms."
Terms of surrender that felt more like a declaration of war than capitulation. In that moment, Caitlin felt like her back was against the wall in more ways than one.
"Your terms. You're offering me sex and nothing more?"
He studied her face with unnerving intensity.
"I'm offering great sex. Here. Now."
She waited. He definitely put a period at the end of the sentence. "So, sex. Great sex. And nothing else. How do you know it will be great?"
"Honey, trust me. We will be great together."
Yes, she couldn't argue that. Okay, then, she couldn't fault the man for being upfront and forthright, could she? Just because she didn't like what he was saying didn't mean she didn't appreciate his honesty. At any other time in her life, with any other man, Caitlin would have said thanks but no thanks and gone about her business. This time was different. Josh was different. She was different. She wanted him. She intended to have him. Not just for sex, not just for today. She wanted Josh Tarkington for great sex and everything else. The war metaphor didn't work for her. Chess made much more sense. She needed to be thinking two and three moves beyond the moment. Unfortunately, she could barely think at all because he'd slid his hand upward and cupped her breast. His thumb scraped across her nipple, and she felt it clear to her toes.
"What say you, Ms. Timberlake?"
"I'm thinking."
"Think fast."
Think, yes. She needed to think. She needed to think strategically. She needed to concoct a strategy of her own. It was a mistake to let him define the narrative here, which was exactly what he'd done by declaring both war and surrender from the outset. Think, Caitlin, think. But oh, that was difficult to do with his hard body pressed up against her. She forced herself to concentrate. She had grown up with two older brothers. She'd learned the science of battle tactics long ago. But the restless glitter in his eyes told her she was running out of time. This was not a moment for negotiation, but for action. Caitlin wanted to act. With every fiber of her being, she wanted to act right now. But natural caution caused her to hesitate.
"We don't have protection."
"In that respect, I'm a Boy Scout. Always prepared."
Okay, then. Well, good.
Sleeping with him now like this would be a big enough risk as it was. Josh Tarkington wasn't one of the pliable men of her past who fell for her quickly and allowed her to call all of the relationship shots. He might be in lust with her, but he wasn't in love with her. I could lose this war. He could break my heart.
Tick-tock,
he murmured. He shifted his head and nipped at her ear.
Time to make your choice.
Her choice. Yes, that summed it up nicely, didn't it? He was her choice. Caitlin licked her lips and decided to trust her instincts. She loosened the hold she had on his shirt and skimmed her hand upward until she cradled his stubbled jaw in her hand.
You, Josh. I want you. Here. Now.
The gray eyes blazed. He turned his mouth into her hand and deliberately nipped the inside of her palm. She went woozy with need. He made a low growling sound and swept her up into his arms as if she weighed nothing at all. He carried her the few short steps to the bed and deposited her in the middle of the quilt. He put a knee on the feather bed, paused to give her a slow once-over, and the carnal gleam in his eyes almost caused her to let the rest of her words die on her tongue. But the man had been honest with her. She could do no less than return the favor. As he lowered himself atop her, she stalled him with a hand against his chest. Just one thing. I heard what you said. I accept that you consider this surrender. But it's only fair to tell you that I see the situation a little differently. He narrowed those steaming gray eyes.
I don't think I want to hear this.
No, he probably didn't.
I'm giving you fair warning, Josh. I want you here and now. But I also want forever.
You can throw down surrender all you want, but I'm declaring that you are under siege.
Journal entry. Women. Enough said.
Chapter 8. Josh froze.
Under siege? I also want forever? Of course she does. Isn't that just my luck?
Every ounce of self-preservation he possessed clamored at him to stop this immediately, to drag himself up and away, and save the life in Eternity Springs that he'd been building for almost 2 years now. Because no way would he come out of this unscathed. Caitlin was an Eternity Springs princess, with ties on her mother's side going all the way back to the founding of the town. Sleeping with Caitlin Timberlake, beneath her father's and brother's noses, was bound to earn him a beating or 12. Hell, even Brick might line up against him. And the women in town? I might as well put a for sale sign in the windows of both the garage and the house right now. But no matter how loudly his better sense talked to him, other parts unfortunately screamed a whole lot louder. Sometimes a man's base nature drove the bus, and good sense simply had to hang on for the wild ride. This, apparently, was one of those times. He was going to do this, and he was going to regret it. The outcome had been all but inevitable since the moment that gondola ground to a halt. At least he'd been honest with her about his lack of intentions. He could hold his head high and give her father and brother, maybe a few others too, a good angle for the shot to the jaw they'd surely want to give him. Once word got out, and it would, they'd line up to do the deed. As far as they knew, he was nothing but a grease monkey from Oklahoma. If they found out the truth, no, that wasn't going to happen.
Under siege my ass. You'll change your mind,
he told her right before his lips met hers in a deep, slow, hungry kiss. His hands went to work, and her blouse and front-snap lacy peach bra fell away to reveal full, coral-tipped breasts. He paused for a reverent moment
in order to fully appreciate the sight. You are so beautiful, Caitlin. You take my breath away. Her eyes softened with pleasure at his words, and she smiled.
Josh realized he'd made a tactical mistake. Perhaps he could salvage the situation yet.
You'll change your mind about me. I'm really not very good at sex.
The stubborn woman dared to laugh.
I'll just bet. It's true. He stroked her silken skin, so soft. He bent his head and traced the path of his touch with worshipful kisses. I'm a selfish lover. I only worry about pleasing myself.
Then he set about doing exactly that. Unfortunately, what pleased Josh was to drive her insane with pleasure. He loved slowly stripping off her clothing piece by piece, revealing her glorious form to his hungry gaze. He adored touching her, using his fingers to stroke and caress, to play and explore, and find and fondle that exact spot that roused her to a fevered pitch. He enjoyed using his mouth to lick and nibble and suck a scream right out of her. The flush of passion on her face pleased him. The arch of her back and press of her soft flesh against the hardness of his own pleased him. The way she clung to him and squirmed against him and kissed him like she simply couldn't get enough of him pleased him. He found the way she gripped his shoulders and whimpered with need until he joined his body with hers to be more pleasurable than anything he'd experienced in a very long time. So pleasurable, in fact, that he drew the moment out and made it last. He delighted in the tremors of completion he coaxed from her and decided it suited him to make it happen again. The next time, she literally wept, and Josh finally gave in to his own needs. He savored every second of his release before collapsing on top of her, needing to catch his breath, too spent to be careful that he didn't squash her. The scratch had been well and truly itched. They lay without speaking for a full minute, Josh's head buried in the curve of her neck and shoulder, his face planted in the center of one of the rings on the quilt. Eventually, Caitlin wriggled out from beneath him, saying, "You weigh a ton." "See, I'm selfish." Her snort wasn't at all ladylike. He sensed that she'd rolled onto her side and lay with her elbow propped up, her head resting in her hand. He didn't have the energy to lift his head to confirm that, however. Another minute ticked by, and then two. He was drifting towards sleep when she lifted her hand and trailed a finger from his shoulder down his side. "Josh?" Oh, crap. She wanted to talk. She was a talker. He wasn't. He didn't talk after sex. He slept. A little 5-minute nap did wonders for a man. I have to tell you, that was definitely the worst sex ever. His eyes sprang open. He turned his head just enough to look at her. She wore a cat-in-the-cream smile that sent shivers running up and down his spine. Under siege. Oh, crap. She leaned forward and repeated, "Worst sex ever." Following a moment's pause, she added, "When can we do it again?" Josh ran. Not literally, but that pretty much described what happened next. He mumbled, he made excuses, he beat feet as fast as humanly possible. It was the closest thing to a wham-bam-thank-you-ma'am sexual encounter he'd ever participated in, when he was sober, anyway. He wasn't proud of himself. He tried hard not to be a jerk when it came to women. That was part of being the man he'd fought hard to become. The thing with Caitlin? He felt like he'd given in to a craving and fallen off the wagon.
Wonder if there's a 12-step program for jerks.
Still, he'd warned her, hadn't he? He'd given her the opportunity to say no.
It wasn't all guilt rumbling around inside him. Josh was angry, seriously pissed off, at himself, at her, at the circumstances, at fate, the bitch. For all the good that did him. He could stand in his front yard and wave his fist at the clouds like Homer Simpson, but it wouldn't change a thing. He could dig up the roots he'd sunk in Eternity Springs and go somewhere else, but that wouldn't keep trouble from following him. He couldn't change his past, or the path of tornadoes, or the identity of the new girl next door. Once fate decided to play with him, he might as well lie back and enjoy it. In the meantime, he had 3 cars waiting for him that needed oil changes. Josh halfway expected Caitlin to come knocking on his door that afternoon, but it didn't happen. Neither did she seek him out the following day. When a 3rd day passed without his hearing so much as a peep from her, and he'd developed what he feared was a permanent crick in his neck from looking over his shoulder all the time, he decided something needed to be done. What sort of siege was this anyway? Deciding reconnaissance was in order, he went to Murphy's for a burger and a double scoop of gossip. Shortly after dawn the following morning, and after tossing and turning much of the night, he got up, put on his running shoes, and jogged to the rental house on 3rd Street, which he'd learned she'd leased for a year. When she answered his knock, looking mussed and sleepy and delicious, he said, "You want to go running?" She gave him round owl eyes. "What?" "You told me you liked to run. Come with me."
"It's not even 7 o'clock yet."
"Early bird catches the worm. Besides, I open the shop at 8:30. She scowled at him. "Why do you call it a shop? It's a garage." He shrugged and checked his watch. "If you say tick-tock, I'll slam the door in your face." "Are you coming?"
"Give me 5 to get dressed." She opened the screen door and said, "Come on in."
He was too curious to wait outside. The house was small, a 2-bedroom Craftsman that appeared to have been updated within the past few years. A tower of moving boxes sat stacked against one wall, yet to be unpacked. The only furnishings in the front room were a sofa and a reading lamp. He picked up the paperback lying on the sofa and checked the title. A romance. Figures. He opened the book and started scanning the pages. Cindy Christopher had read historical romance novels when he lived with them. Josh would never admit it, but he'd read a few of them. Okay. A lot of them. Back then, he'd liked escaping to a world of rules. "Don't make fun of me for my reading choices," Caitlin said when she entered the room, zipping up a running jacket.
"I wouldn't dream of it."
He meant it.
"You ready?"
"As I'll ever be. It's cold out this morning."
"Great running weather."
Then, because fate was running the show after all, he bent down and gave her a quick, friendly kiss.
"Let's go."
Caitlin was right about the chill in the air. When Flynn Brogan brought his Explorer in for an oil change yesterday, he'd mentioned the possibility of snow by the end of the week. While some of his neighbors claimed to dread the arrival of winter, Josh enjoyed the changing seasons for the same reason he liked the mountains. Nothing Malibu about Eternity Springs. They didn't speak as they took his usual route through town, running side by side. He turned up the winding road to Cemetery Hill, and at the cemetery gate, Caitlin called,
"I need to sit for a few, Josh. Altitude."
He let her take the lead. She wove in and out of the rows of headstones until she reached an iron bench. There, she bent over, rested her hands on her knees, and caught her breath. Josh removed his water bottle from his waist pack and silently offered it to her. After quenching her thirst, she sank on to the bench.
"This is killing me. I haven't run since I left New York."
"You should have told me to skip the hill."
No, it's good. It's all good."
Josh took a seat beside her. He gestured toward a marker off to their left.
"You have family here. Roots. Your people were an Eternity Springs founding family. I've toured the Historical Society's museum."
"Yes. The Silver Miracle Mine provided the basis of my mom's family's money. I inherited a share of it when my grandfather died. That's the money I'm using to open Gingerbread House.
He pictured the Munster mansion and imagined it restored to its former glory.
Nice name.
I like it.
Are you going to live there?
No, I've worked from home enough to know that I'm happier keeping my workplace separate from the place where I live.
She glanced at him then and asked, "So, what are we doing here, Josh?"
"You're catching your breath."
He sucked in a breath, then added, "It's what I've been doing since I made a beeline out of your attic."
She nodded. "You did escape awfully fast."
"Yeah, I'm sorry about that. It wasn't well done of me."
After a moment's hesitation, he added,
"At least I remembered to haul that trunk to your car. What was in it? Lead bricks?
Silver bars."
"Seriously?"
Caitlin nodded. "It's quite the find. In addition to the silver, the chest held a pair of photographs and some legal documents. Celeste is going to attempt to track down the rightful owner."
"Cool."
After that, they both fell silent. Josh watched the sun rising above the mountain peaks and searched for the words she deserved. Eloquence seemed to be beyond his capabilities at the moment, so he decided to keep it simple.
"I owe you an apology and an explanation. I wasn't thinking clearly the other day. Lust has a way of hazing a man's mind."
"A woman's, too," she said lightly. "Apology accepted. You needn't worry that I've been sitting around stewing about it."
"Good."
He darted her a look.
"So, you haven't been around. Have you changed your mind about, well, laying siege?"
"After the worst sex ever?"
Caitlin stretched out her legs, crossed them at the ankles. "Not hardly, but I've been busy. We started demo yesterday. Jax gave me a long list of decisions to make."
Josh really wished she hadn't brought up the sex. He didn't need to be distracted.
"Ah, okay. Well, in that case, you should know why I'm dead serious about my intentions, or I guess I should say my lack of intentions. I'm not just being a guy who isn't ready to settle down or someone who shuns commitment. I'll never change my mind. And after what happened between us the other morning, I think you should know why."
"You are making it sound ominous."
"Ominous is a fitting word. So is the graveyard location for the telling of it."
Caitlin gave him a searching look.
"Someone broke your heart, didn't they?"
"Not in the way you're thinking. Let me start from the beginning."
He pushed to his feet and began to pace. Caitlin watched him, distracted by the way his sweaty running shirt clung to his torso. He was a fine-looking man. Very fine. He dragged his hand down his face, then began.
"Growing up, my life was anything but normal. I will not talk about it, so don't bother asking questions. The pertinent information is that a few years back, I was feeling pretty good about life. I decided to make a run at normal."
Now she was intrigued. Nothing like someone telling you not to ask about something to make you want to ask about it.
"There was a little girl living upstairs in my apartment building, Kelsey. I met her when she was 4 years old."
"A child?" Caitlin sat up straight upon hearing the obvious pain in his voice. He turned away from her, his hands braced on his hips.
"I haven't talked about this in a very long time. It's not easy to do."
"Why don't we walk?" she suggested. "I always find that difficult things are easier to talk about when I'm moving."
He nodded his agreement, and Caitlin led the way. They walked almost to the end of the line of grave markers before he continued.
"She was a little redhead, with big green eyes, eyes like yours. She was cute as a button. A little shy, but once she got to know you, she opened up. She and her mother had a hard time of it. Janie, her mom's name was Janie, worked retail, and her ex was always late on his child support. She struggled to keep a job."
He darted a look toward Caitlin, and with a rueful smile added,
"Daycare was a problem."
"It certainly can be," she replied, keeping her tone even. Now was not the time to say, "I told you so."
I helped her. Took care of the kid a time or two. Janie and I got to be friends, and then more than friends. Kelsey's dad was never around. She took to calling me Daddy.
The naked pain in his voice caused her heart to catch, and Caitlin knew in that moment that this story was not one she wanted to hear.
I loved her. I fell head over heels for that little girl. Janie and I decided to get married. I was happy. We were happy. We were in the process of creating a family. We picked June 10th as our wedding date because she wanted to be a June bride.
He stopped abruptly, and his jaw went as hard as the gravestones that surrounded them.
But April 10th came first.
Caitlin had an idea of where this story was headed. She wanted to hug him, but his manner held her off. Instead, she reached out and gave his arm a comforting touch. He glanced down at her.
Have you heard the story already?
Not details, no. I know there was a storm. She had not heard about a fiancé, however. He leaned back against a Davenport family gravestone and folded his arms.
Springtime in Tornado Alley. When a storm is brewing, the air has a certain feel to it. It's heavy and still. There's a sense of anticipation to it. We call it tornado weather, and if you live there, you know what it is. When the weather feels that way, you learn to keep an eye on the sky and an ear out for phone alerts. The afternoon of April 10th felt like tornado weather. Janie managed a health food store in a strip mall, and she was due to get off at 5. I didn't like the way things were shaping up. I had a weird feeling in my gut. So I asked her to close a little early and come on home. I picked up Kelsey from daycare and brought her home. Janie drove up just as I pulled into the garage. I'd bought a house by then. The girls had been living there 4 months. A little after 4 p.m., the storm sirens went off. Though he gazed off toward Murphy Mountain, his thoughts were obviously somewhere else. He cleared his throat. I will never forget stepping out onto my back porch and seeing that thing coming toward us. It was huge and black, horrible and compelling at the same time. You wanted to watch it. I couldn't take my eyes off of it. Kelsey started crying. She was scared. He dragged a hand across his mouth and repeated, "So scared."
Tears welled up inside Caitlin. She wanted to tell him to stop. She didn't want to hear it. She didn't want to know, didn't need to know. Instead, she bit her lower lip and listened.
We huddled up in the bathroom at the center of the house. I even had a little helmet for Kelsey to wear. But as my luck would have it, this turned out to be an F4. Wind speeds well over 200 miles an hour. You know how they always say that a tornado sounds like a train? It's true. A train bearing down upon you. This happened almost a decade ago, but I hear that sound in my dreams. A big black monster of a train.
He swallowed hard, then said matter-of-factly,
"We took a direct hit. Things started flying and falling down. Then the wind roared over us, picked us up. It sucked Kelsey right out of my arms. I couldn't hold her."
He blew out a heavy breath and repeated,
"I couldn't hold on to her."
Caitlin covered her mouth with both hands. She couldn't hold back the tears. Such raw pain filled his expression. Her heart literally broke for him.
"Oh, Josh. No, I am so sorry."
He closed his eyes against the sorrow in hers and allowed the memories to wash over him. The brutal, unstoppable force, bone-chilling fear.
Something whacked my head and knocked me out. The last thing I remember was losing my grip on Kelsey. The next thing I recall is Janie screaming, "Help me, help me, help us. Josh, get up, you have to help us." The storm didn't carry us far. dropped all three of us into what had been the front yard. The only injury I had was a bump on the head. Janie. He blew out another heavy breath. The wind blew a shard of wood through her leg, sliced an artery. She was bleeding out. And she was crawling, trying to get to her daughter, screaming, "Kelsey, Kelsey, oh God, Kelsey, get up, baby!" Kelsey, a little rag doll lying still and broken in the debris of what had been their lives.
"You didn't hold on to her. Why didn't you hold on to her? For God's sake, Joshua, get up! Get up! Help me! Help me! Help us!"
He gave his head a shake, flinging away the memories. Then he cleared his throat and said, "Janie bled to death. Kelsey's neck was broken." The great irony I learned later was that neither Janie's store or the daycare were hit. Tears had spilled from Caitlin's eyes and trailed down her cheek. "Josh, that's the most horrible thing I ever heard. My heart breaks for you." "It messed me up, and it fundamentally changed me."
"I'm sure it did. How do you deal with something like that?"
"Mainly drugs and booze."
"How do you get over it?"
"You don't."
He shrugged. "Did you talk to someone afterward?"
"A shrink, you mean?"
Josh laughed and pushed away from the headstone. He continued the walk, his gaze snagging briefly on a stone angel set among the markers.
"If she only knew."
A mental health professional of some sort. Anyone would need help dealing with the aftermath of an event like the one you went through.
"Yes, I talked to a shrink. Every day for 3 months, twice a week for months after that. I thought I had a handle on it, until the next storm got me a couple years later. Well, not me exactly. It took out my car. I'd loaned it to a friend, a girl I was dating."
Caitlin looked at him with dawning horror. "Josh!"
"She wasn't hurt. Storm blew through the parking lot where she worked. After that, I backslid a bit. That was a nice way to put it. The girl and I didn't make it."
"You stayed in Oklahoma?"
"Yep. 3 more years.
Though, of course, he'd been in California a good chunk of that time. Clawing his way back seemed to take longer the older he got."
"I mean, I'd been hit twice. I figured the odds of it happening again were slim to none."
"But it did?"
"Yep. An F-3 blew through my home and business, a marina that the bank and I owned on a lake about an hour from Oklahoma City. Only a 180-mile-hour wind this time, and no one was hurt. We rode it out inside a tornado shelter. However, it flattened everything I owned. I had 7 employees at the time. The previous owner had lost the business during the drought, but the year I bought it, the lake filled up and boats came back and were doing great."
"I can't believe that. 3 times? You've been hit by a tornado 3 times. What are the odds?"
4 times, if you count the house and business separately. As far as odds go," he shrugged, "I'm snake bit."
"I understand why you would feel that way. What I don't understand is why these horrible events have caused you to swear off relationships."
He took her hand and laced their fingers. "I'm tired of fighting my way back. Bone tired of it. I honestly don't have the fight left in me to do it again. I decided to make some changes so that I will never again be put in that position. First, I moved away from Tornado Alley. Second, I decided that I'll never again be responsible for another person's livelihood. I'll either work for someone else or for myself in a one-man operation. Finally," he tugged her to a stop, released her hand and placed his hands on her shoulders. Looking her square in the eyes, he stated, "I decided that I'm done with relationships. I will not love again, not a woman, not a child." He saw her subtly stiffen, but he pressed on. "Caitlin, before you and I go any further, I need you to hear what I'm saying.
I refuse to be responsible for anyone else ever again. I'll be your friend. I'd like very much to be your friend. I'll be your lover. I'd like that even more. But I will not fall in love with you ever. You need to believe me when I say it. Some emotion he couldn't name flickered in her eyes, but he didn't let it stop him. He released his grip on her shoulders and slid his hands down to hers. Squeezing them gently, he insisted, "You deserve more. You deserve to be loved. You are a forever kind of girl, and you deserve a forever guy. I can't be that for you, Caitlin. I have nothing to offer you beyond the casual. You can't let the notion that you might find forever with me get in the way of finding forever with someone else. Call me a superstitious fool, call me a coward, both are probably true. But I'm not going to marry anyone, ever. I'm not going to fall in love with anyone, ever. You can lay siege all you want. But it's not going to change those basic facts. It's not going to change me." Caitlin pulled away from him and took a step back. "That's quite a speech, Tarkington. The end of it bordered on insulting, but I do understand why you said what you said. The question I have is, where do we go from here? You're suggesting more than friends, but less than a couple? Do you really think that will work here in Eternity Springs?"
"If we're careful about it, yes. But only if that's what you want. If simple friendship is off the table, I'll accept that too. As long as you agree to my terms, you can call the shots."
"I think you must have been a battlefield general in a past life, Josh, or a corporate takeover specialist. We're doing a lot of negotiating." Caitlin stared at him for a long minute. "It could be sort of exciting, the secrecy of carrying on beneath the noses of our friends and neighbors."
"And family," he pointed out.
"Definitely and family," she agreed with a little laugh. "I've never acted illicitly in my life. I'm usually up for a new experience. I think it might be fun, this... what shall we call it?"
"Friends with benefits is the popular term."
Caitlin wrinkled her nose. "No, I don't like that. Too pop culture. You and I, Tarkington, are going to have a friend affair." With that, she went up on her toes and kissed him hard but fast. Then she took off down the hill to finish their run. Josh had no choice but to follow her.
Journal entry. Anniversaries. Why do people mark anniversaries? What the hell good does it do to look backward? Can't turn on the radio or the damn TV without hearing newscasters with their panties in a wad. Today is the third anniversary of the F5 tornado that cut a 14-mile swath across our state, killing 63 and injuring hundreds. Well, whoop-dee-doo. Happy anniversary. Birthdays aren't much better. So you were born. Big damn deal. You're not special. Everybody was born. Everybody dies. Why do those everyday events require flowers on a grave? Screw that. I'm over it. I'm not looking backward anymore. No more rear-view mirrors for me, no sir. Someone else will have to put birthday flowers on Kelsey's grave next week. I'm over it.
I hate anniversaries. I just placed an order for daffodils.
Chapter 9. By mutual agreement, Caitlin and Josh went different directions at the bottom of Cemetery Hill. Caitlin's mind spun as she made her way home. The more she thought about Josh's experience, the more sober she grew. What a seriously awful thing to have happened to him. In the past few days, she'd done some snooping around about Josh. Small-town gossip was an extremely powerful resource. With only a few casual questions, she'd managed to learn quite a lot. Eternity Springs labeled him as a nice, quiet, friendly guy who didn't cause trouble. He was a good neighbor who kept his lawn mowed and he paid his bills on time. People knew he'd been Brick Callahan's foster brother, but the circumstances that led to his being in that system remained a mystery.
Colt Rafferty had said Josh could make an engine hum. But of course, Caitlin had already discovered that for herself. He wasn't a consummate flirt, like Brick had been before falling for Liliana Howe. But he could turn on the charm when he wished.